And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. We're into the second hour of the program. I want to thank our Friday panel once again. Senator Niall Blaney, Emma Gover and Seamus McDade. We really do appreciate them landing down to us here because we're broadcasting today live from the ATU and Letterkenny. It's part of the TBEX convention which is taking place today, and we have hundreds of people involved in promoting the travel industry, whether bloggers, influencers or however they might self-describe. Hundreds of them have been invited here. It's only the second time, I believe, we've hosted this event in Ireland, and it is of great significance in terms of, you know, the product, Donegal product, the Northwest product. Obviously, they're networking and chatting and attending various events here today, but there are tours and plans for them to go out and see the most beautiful parts of our region. So it is really significant. We're going to be speaking to some of the delegates on the program a little later on. We've got a bit of live music for you as well. Deputy Catherine Connolly is travelling the country as part of her presidential campaign. Hopefully she'll be joining us a little later on. That and so much more besides. Now, to your comments, and we appreciate them coming in great numbers this morning. A caller says, we need a president as much as we need royalty here. No need whatsoever. And I'd love to tease that conversation out more with you if you believe that is the case. Hi, Greg. Whether or not we need a president is up for debate, but we really need him to live, or do we really need him or her to live in a big house? I wonder how much it costs to run the Aris for a year, which is an interesting point, isn't it? My question is, why do we have to allow and respect every irrational, illogical opinion as if it has the same weight as objective fact and reality? That's the real problem. We let morons think they're just as correct in their subjective opinions rather than constantly reinforcing the facts. Like, sorry folks, facts don't care about your feelings about abortion or eugenics. Read Charlie Kirk. He was able to debate anyone without resorting to name calling and identity arguments. For the most part, that is true, but not 100% true. But I'll read on here. The left have to use virtue signalling and identify politics, identity politics. Charlie was at the Oxford Union debate last month, and he left the leftists speechless. The truth will always stand up to scrutiny. Lies cannot. R.I.P. Charlie Kirk. RTE and Virgin Media reported that Charlie Kirk was a far-right activist, which again was inappropriate, unfair, and I think the terminology they used was right-wing, not far-right, and he was a self-declared member of the right-wing, his ideology and all of that, and was well capable of debating that himself. I didn't see him referenced as a far-right activist, but certainly a right-wing activist, but that was how he described himself, and in fact he wrote a book along those lines. Another caller says, while I do not agree at all with what's happening to Simon Harris's family, people all have their breaking point and are fed up with empty promises from politicians. Politicians should think before they speak and make empty promises. All the people suffering and being kept waiting for months and months, people have reached their limit. But what happens when we go over that limit? How do we deal with it? Do we not sort of try and adjust things, you know, over debate or at the ballot box? You know, the majority of people voted this government in. Greg, social media has become a very dangerous thing nowadays, says another listener. Years ago, there was always a few dangerous people, but they were spread out over and all over the place and not organised. Nowadays, they can talk to each other online and get organised and then get together for meetings and rallies. You even see it here. There's a Facebook page which seems to be back up again under a different name, and they're always naming people without actually producing evidence. I think they are a very sinister group. I'm not sure what you're referencing, but I may suspect what you're referencing. The bottom line is that people feel justified in what they're doing, and they'll go to the grave believing what they're doing is the right thing. That being said, you identify people, individuals, their homes, and you say very negative things about them. You know, if something happens, you then can't sort of claim that, you know, you had no hand, act, or part in it. How did this happen? Elon bought Twitter and restored comedy, by which he meant he removed all moderation. Facebook followed suit, as did all social media. The right's fight against the censorship of racism is what's allowed all this to be brought up to the forefront of the net. They turned social media into 4chan and 8chan. And what is remarkable too, on what I would have thought maybe would be a more controlled social media in TikTok, is the amount of racism and and stuff that you see on that platform now is unbelievable. Greg, I watched a film last year called Civil War, starring Kirsten Dunst. It was very prophetic about what is happening in the US. Now, basically, California and New York, as well as the armed forces, made a stand against the president. Very scary times. Another caller says, let's not forget a Limerick councillor very vocally stated that people protesting over the little girl being stabbed in Dublin should be shot in the head or beaten by the public. The liberal left have an extremely dangerous and violent side that needs called out for what it is. Listen, I keep using this reference of a horseshoe, and the idea of that is that you've got two sides of the horseshoe, but they meet in the middle, and you have extremists on all sides, and they don't represent the majority of public, but anyway, there you go. Greg, your guest is right. Lots of people do not trust politicians anymore. Years ago, people blindly believed everything that was said. Now we can analyse what they're doing, and thankfully, we access or have access to what is going on in the EU. So when we fear or when we hear that they want to restrict access to internet platforms to counter misinformation and disinformation, etc., when some government members have been found to be guilty themselves. Well, yes, but also there's a bigger battle going on there about censorship and about what can be accessed by children and what have you. And sometimes, you know, they use the free speech argument so they can continue to post and share whatever they wish to share. Okay, listen, that's a run through some of your comments. We've got loads more. Thank you so, so much for keeping us so busy. We are broadcasting live here from the ATU in Letterkenny. It's as it hosts the TBEX Europe 2025 conference. And you might be able to hear in the background, things getting very busy here. They've been involved in a program of events so far this morning. It was a sponsors showcase. They've now broken for a coffee break, and we will be talking to loads of people involved in and behind this conference, but we'll take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back. And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. We're out and about today. We're at the ATU in Letterkenny. And just to remind you, you can watch the show if you're at home on your smart TV, your Fire Stick. We're on the YouTube app, Highland Radio Ireland, or across X and our Facebook page as well. We're joined here at our broadcast position by Mary Daly, Senior Tourism Development Officer with Donegal County Council. Morning, Mary. Thank you so much for having us. What a brilliant event.
Yes, Greg, it's great to have you here, and I suppose it's great for us to be able to bring a flavour of the last few days to your listeners. Yes, it's a great event. We're delighted.
What's going on here?
Okay. So, TBEX conference. So what TBEX is, it's Travel Bloggers Exchange. But, I mean, it actually encompasses more than that. It's everyone who writes in terms of travel media. So you have everyone here from your traditional journalists that are writing for publications. You have TV presenters. You have podcasters. You have videographers, photographers. You have bloggers. You have Instagrammers. You have influencers and TikTokers and literally everything in between.
Like, to the point where it would be very hard to sort of quantify the reach and exposure from all of these individuals as a collective, because we all know now more and more when we visit somewhere, we do our research, we want to find out what it's like. We don't necessarily just want to read a short review. We want to know what other people think. We want to see it. These people are incredibly influential in this space.
We cannot underestimate really the power of, you know, the ripple effect. So it's the hundreds of people that are here for the last week that have got to experience our county, our people, our music, our culture, our food, our landscapes. You know, they spent 2 days out and about. We had 15 tours each day and literally brought them to every corner of the county. And just when I'm saying that, I want to really reach out and thank all our tourism businesses in our county as well for really opening their doors to these people. But, you know, so they've got to experience that over the last few days. They've got to experience all our evening events. They've got to experience Letterkenny at night over the last few days. And I know there's been a lot of events in different places. But it's that ripple effect. We don't know where this story will land. So we don't know where the story that they're going to tell about Donegal will land. And I suppose that's, you know, so it's the thousands, you know, sometimes millions. Like, some of these people have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of followers on YouTube or on different platforms. And it's really that, as you say, you know, we don't know where their story will land in terms of potential visitors to our county, in terms of, you know, getting that message out that Donegal is a fantastic place to come and see.
You know, we if we're lucky enough to travel around the world, you know, you go to some places and you're blown away by it. You think, wow, this is amazing. I can't believe people have this on their own back door. That's what these people are seeing about our county. You know, obviously it's great to get them out, wine and dine them, you know, look after them and all that kind of stuff. But when you bring them to the various places we've talked about, it blow their head off because, you know, there's much beauty, much going on.
Exactly. And I mean, if you look at the stories over the last few days, I mean, I tried last night to just go through the amount of stories on Instagram, the amount of posts in relation to T-Bex. Like, we have obviously it's all about, you know, see from, I suppose, the council's perspective, you know, this was a huge investment and bringing all of this here. And it has been in Ireland twice before, in 2013 in Dublin and in 2017 in Killarney. So we will be looking, and we have a monitor out. And just for 2 days last week, prior to the conference, we had 1.7 million you know, references to hashtag T-Bex Donegal.
And I'll tell you why that doesn't tell the full stories, because we are in an era now where hashtags are less used and less important, and X has driven an awful lot of that. So that's impressive, but doesn't tell a fraction of the story.
It doesn't tell a fraction because, as you know, stories on Instagram, stories on any platform aren't even included in that.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you know, it's a huge potential here for the county in terms of the exposure we can get from this. I mean, the experiences that they had, just to give you an example, you know, they would have gone to Schlieve League, the highest accessible sea cliffs in Europe. I mean, they went then to the Rusty Mackerel afterwards. They got to have some beautiful chowder. But they had world famous musicians in the likes of Dermot Byrne and Steve Cooney playing for them there while they were having their lunch. So that's just one experience. Or the, you know, Fannad Lighthouse, go out to see the lighthouse and then go to the old Glen Bar where you had Martin McGinley and crew playing music for them. So, you know, then they went surfing in Rasnaula. They walked in Ireland's oldest town in Ballyshannon. In Donegal town, they got to go around, experience, you know, things like McGee's, the tradition of our crafts, Hannah hats, you know, to see that element of, you know, what's important to Donegal. They also got to go to see, you know, Emerald Guitars, for example, to see how we make world-class guitars in this county. You know, they got to learn some Cúpla Focal. They went to Idris Gael. They got to step back in time in Glencolumbkill Folk Village. Of course, Glenveagh National Park. I mean, they're only a sample of the experiences.
And I can feel like I could add another 20 onto that.
Oh, and there was that.
I know what you're saying, but our strength is its depth almost.
Yeah.
We spoke remotely to Rick Calvert, CEO and founder of this brilliant initiative some time ago. So it's great that here we are, sitting face-to-face. Rick,
good to see you in person, Greg.
I can't recall if this... Is this your first time in the Northwest?
Second time, okay. Because I came to visit about a year ago with Mary.
So what is your impressions of us here? Not the people, the people, the
it's
place.
Horrible, Greg. It's amazing.
Hashtag liar.
Yeah. No, it's amazing.
Yeah.
This is my third, I'd say, region of Ireland that I've been to. You know, Dublin the first time, which is kind of for rookies, right? Ireland for rookies. And then
rich rookies, yeah.
Yeah, and then, yes, and then Killarney afterwards, which, you know, oh, this feels a little bit more Irish. And then we come to Donegal, and it's like, this is the authentic Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, this is where you kind of feel the historical Ireland, the thing you picture in your mind Ireland to be, that's Donegal.
That's really, I really pleased that you said that, because sometimes, especially someone with a great interest in promoting our area and tourism, so many people don't get to see the authentic Ireland, and
yes.
They believe that, you know, you're a Dublin experience, and no shade on them.
No, it's a great city.
Yeah, but that's not the full experience.
No.
Some of it in Grafton Street, you hear people putting on the, oh, bigara accents, and then they speak with a D4 accent when the mic's off, you know, whereas it's very authentic, it's real here.
Yes. I'll tell you, one of our conference directors last night was shooting some drone shots outside the city, and they were out later than they expected, and they couldn't get a cab back, and they couldn't get to a restaurant. And the person that they were with who was helping them said, just come to my house and I'll cook you some food and I'll find you a way home. And that is, again, kind of the reputation you have as Irish people and here in Donegal in particular. And there's multiple anecdotes like that from people here at the conference that they've had since being in Donegal.
When we spoke previously, we were talking about the importance of the blogging industry, or however people want to self-describe themselves. And a lot of it's done, you know, as commercial tie-ins, sponsored posts, this type of stuff. And we drilled down to the fact that only really works is if you remain authentic, though,
Absolutely.
And you remain true to your opinions and you give honest reviews of where you're going. And it's bedded in like that. It works, even though obviously there's a commercial element to it. There's still a great trust between the bloggers and their consumers.
Yes, exactly. Michaela Malozzi was our keynote speaker yesterday. I think you're talking to her later today. She was approached by China Airlines, which is actually a Taiwanese airline. So they've got this problem with branding. And they wanted her to do, you know, some type of commercial for them. And she said, I don't really know what the angle is. How do I do that that's true to myself? And she travels the world and dances, learning traditional dances. Her TV show is called Bare Feet with Michaela Malozzi. She's got 4 Emmy Awards. And it came out in their conversations with them that they have a dance team from the flight attendants of China Airlines. So they came up with a little promotion with her having a dream sequence and them all dancing on the plane. So it was true to what her audience wanted and what they expected from her. And it was authentic, but there was some commercial element to it.
Yeah, of course, listen, I'm going to focus a bit on what's good for us and the promotion and all that type of stuff. But curiously, what is the advantage of bringing all of these different types of influencers, bloggers together, be it, you know, in the written media, TikTokers, YouTube, Reels, whatever it might be?
Yeah.
Like, what's the positive? What's the exchange of information? Because it's a competitive market too, I'd imagine.
Absolutely. You know, it's very interesting. It is a competitive market, but creators in general do this because they love it. So it is very collaborative. You can see here, people are hugging each other. There's lots of tears here at TBEX and reunions. So it is also collaborative because they do projects with each other. And some of them may last for a couple of weeks or a month or a year. And some of them last for many years or decades. So there's a lot of collaboration in addition to competition. But to answer the first part of your question was the authenticity. That's exactly what these creators do. Again, we have another guest coming on later who travels the world getting shaves and haircuts. That's what he's passionate about. Michaela travels the world dancing. We have other people who travel the world on motorcycles. We have people who travel the world and stay in hostels, people who only stay in luxury hotels. They each have their own particular niche and focus and passion, and they're authentic in their own way. And so for a destination like Donegal, which really the thing that you're selling is authentic Ireland, it's a perfect match.
Yeah.
Because the people who, traditional music, everybody loves the music here.
As you see, I think we struggle with marketing this region like that.
Absolutely you do.
Because, no, are you going to put authentic Ireland on a poster, Mary Daly? Tell the truth. Are you gonna stick it to Dublin and say, you know, we're authentic Ireland? Of course you're not.
Absolutely, and I mean, that's why we say Donegal, it's in our DNA, that's our branding, and DNA is diverse, natural and authentic, and I suppose that's what we want to say. And I mean, I know you alluded to it earlier, people sometimes say, oh yeah, I've been to Ireland, I've been to Dublin, and nothing wrong with Dublin, it's fantastic, but you know, I say to them, if they want to see the real Ireland, they have to come out of the city and visit places.
You just touched on it, Greg. Mary doesn't have to say it. Our people will say it for her.
Well, that's why she works hard to get you here, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay. And it is a big deal, Mary, and I know it took an awful lot of work, and there's a lot of backing here from the council. And as I say, this is one of those ones that we might sort of feel the ripple in 2-3 years, you know, because we think very much in the moment, you know, like at the moment, our spend in America is down like 20%. Our spend in Britain is up 11%. But that's now, next year. And it's the same with American tourists. Where are they going to go? Tourists from any part of the world, for that matter.
And that's it. And I mean, you know, as you say, you know, things change in terms of visitors from one region to another. For example, Donegal has seen a huge growth in Canadian visitors this year. And I mean, that's one of the, you know, I was at Quebec.
Guilty pleasure is I go up to them and say, what part of America are you from? I tour.
You can't tell that joke anymore, Greg.
Tour the county.
I know.
That's all I do.
Yes. But, you know, I was privileged to be in Quebec earlier this year at the TBEX conference in Quebec. And it was great to be able to have, I suppose, to sit down with people who were, you know, travel bloggers, travel writers in Canada, and to be able to tell the story of Donegal, for example, to that market, because that is a growing market for us, particularly within the Gulf. And as you know, we have a great golfing product here. And, you know, so there is swings and roundabouts in terms of where people come. And, you know, so like that might be our growth market this year. And then, you know, but it changes.
And the key thing there is you don't focus on a specific market.
That's,
you know,
you need
to diversify. Anytime you're over reliant in any area of business on one market, if the wind changes, you're in a
be able to diversify.
Exactly. Listen, we must move on. Mary Daly, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Greg.
Touch base again just before we wrap up, if that's all right. But listen, it's been lovely getting to know you. I think I should go to one of these conferences, wherever it is, as long as it's not Ireland or Britain. If you're having one in Italy, France, I'll go.
We have some.
I will be your guest.
You can come with us to Kazakhstan next year, Greg.
No problem. Yeah. All right, listen, thanks so much, Rick. It's been lovely getting to know you a little bit. Mary, thank you so much, and keep up the fantastic work.
Thank you, Greg, and thanks for Highland being here this morning, and I suppose to help us again tell the people locally about this event and
it's
the potential.
It's easy, because it is in our DNA.
In our DNA, Greg.
Thanks very much. Okay, you're tuned to the 9 till noon show, a really special show coming live here from the ATU in Letterkenny. We've got more delegates and personalities for you to meet. And coming up, in fact, immediately after the next break, we'll be speaking to Deputy Catherine Connolly, who I'm sure will be seeking your votes when it comes to the presidential election time. Stay tuned for that. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. We're broadcasting live here, as you've just heard in that promo, from the TBEX conference. And delegates have broken and are in the cafeteria area here just to, I suppose, mingle and network even more so. Okay, I'm very pleased to welcome onto the programme now Deputy Catherine Connolly, Independent, a presidential candidate. It was a lonely field for quite some time, Catherine. A very good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us. It's kind of interesting, isn't it, that you're reaching out to the people of Donegal and so many others here are, we've got such a busy conference here. It's nice to be here at this time.
Absolutely. The place is buzzing. It's so alive.
Yeah. How has your campaign gone so far?
Well, I wouldn't say it was a lonely campaign, and I wouldn't say...
Terms of other candidates,
absolutely.
I beg your pardon.
No, you're right there. It's been a very positive campaign, and from the time I declared in the third week in July, I've been on the road since. I came to Donegal on Wednesday night, and I've just been about everywhere for the last... they certainly have a work ethic in Donegal, and they don't look at the time, and they don't look at food. Certainly the people around me who are excellent. I have Deputy Charles Ward with me, and I have the former Deputy Thomas Pringle, and four councillors, and certainly there's a work ethic as we go around the county.
What has been your engagement like with the public as you put yourself out there for this incredibly important and prestigious role?
Well, everywhere I've gone, actually, I have had no problem with the public coming up and engaging with me, which I very much welcome. I've just come from the Centre for Independent Living, and we have one in Galway. I was in one in Sligo, and it's something that sort of was parallel with my election as a councillor in 1999. The Centre for Independent Living in Galway was very, very active in educating politicians on nothing about us without us, and embedding that philosophy within politicians. And so before that, then I was in the Centre for Cultural Integration, and that was fantastic. And At 8 o'clock this morning, I went up to an estate to look at the defective blocks, the defective concrete, and the sense of despair amongst the people and the householders that I met is just palpable. So I have been very much in a listening mode, very much going to different centres, whether they're community centres, whether it's meeting people, or open forums. I've done four open forums now, one with Vincent Brown as an independent chair, one with Carol Coleman, and two other ones with academics, one in Dundalk and one in Leitrim in Carrick-on-Shannon. So I suppose what I'm saying is I've made myself available from day one. I've stood up, I made my decision, and I stand proudly and say to the people of Donegal, as I do to the people of country, Tá Rogha Agat, you have a choice in this election.
In terms of the support you talked of here, former Deputy Thomas Pringle, the 100% Redress Party, but not Sinn Féin, and there was a period of time whereby it seemed that they might row in behind you. We spoke to Deputy Piers Doherty a number of weeks ago, and that seemed to indicate the cooling of that. What happened there? Were you anticipating or in talks with Sinn Féin for their support, and is there any reason as to why it's not been forthcoming yet?
I have no insight as to how Sinn Féin make their decision and their decision-making process, but I respect all of the parties that told me they had their own internal process and they would come back to me. I think it's important to say that I made my decision not based on party support, not based on my ability to fund this campaign, because I don't have that ability. I mean, the figures being used are astronomical, from a quarter of a million to a half a million. And I made the decision in the same manner that I made my decision about Leascan Corla. It was the right thing to do. It was time to stand up and be counted and articulate a different vision for the country. So I made that decision. Obviously, I need the support of parties, independents and people across the floor of the Dáil. And luckily for me, very early, Social Democrats came on board, People Before Profit came on board, the members of my own technical group came on board. Sinn Féin always indicated it would be September. So did the Labour Party, in fact, say it would be December. They actually came back before that. The Green Party also indicated it would be September. So I respected that from day one.
How important do you think the role is of President? Is it, and I'll ask a long question so you can take a drink of that water. Do you believe it is a role that can make a positive influence on people's lives beyond the ceremonial element of it? You know what I mean? Like, what difference do you think you can make to people's lives?
Well, first of all, the role of the president is extremely important on a symbolic level, and also in a more practical way. And there are articles in the Constitution that set out the role of the president. And one of them is Article 12.8, where the President is obliged to take a solemn public vow to serve the welfare of the people of Ireland. That's a very important article. All of the articles are important. We're at a point, I think, in our history where we need a voice that's able to stand up, take courage in her hands, and speak out when necessary, in the interests of the welfare of the people of Ireland, in compliance with our constitution.
Well, let me ask you a question in relation to that. You remain strongly opposed to the removal of the triple lock, I take it?
Absolutely.
If the government were to change that through the mechanisms available to it, would you refer that to the Supreme Court to test its constitutionality?
You see, that is speculation, and it's an important question.
Okay,
let me deal with it. I come to it. It's speculation. So the role of president, when legislation comes before the president, as it has done before Michael D, it's the president's role to look at that legislation and see is it in compliance with the constitution. It's a limited role, and I'm very aware of the limitations of that role. If I have doubts about that, then I gather about me the expertise that's there in a formal meeting to see whether the appropriate route is to refer it through the article in the Constitution.
Just at this moment, do you believe the removal of the triple lock would be opposed to the Constitution?
You see, just if I could, because you're asking me a number of questions together.
It's the same question. It's the one question.
Just let me deal with it. As president, you asked me what I would do. So I would use all my experience to date. I would listen to the experts around me and make a decision whether it's appropriate to... The president doesn't make the decision on whether it's constitutional or not. That's not the role of the president. It's the role of the Supreme Court.
Yes.
So the decision for me at that point in the future would be, will I refer it to having taken advice? Will I refer it to the Supreme Court? Or will I sign it into law as president and let it be challenged at some future date in a specific case? So that is the background for deciding whether a president signs in legislation or not.
Yeah.
So I have no difficulty with that role. You know, I've served in many roles, and that will be my role, to reflect, to think, to study, and make a decision.
I'm sorry to focus on this, but I want to sort of dig into you talking of representing the people of Ireland. The people of Ireland will not get an opportunity to vote on that, and I suspect if they did, they would want the triple lock to remain. I'm just pointing one example of something that could become before you as president. If you had any questions about, but now we're talking about maybe behind closed doors, you would seek counsel to see if it is. Why not commit to referring it to the Supreme Court, let it be tested, and give the role of president a little bit more meaning than it has now, if it's something you're passionate about?
I'm absolutely passionate, but one has to understand the role of the president, and the role of the president is, as I've said, and I'm adverse to repetition, but I think it's important to repeat. Okay. I can decide to refer it. The difficulty in referring it, it might be the right decision when one looks at it, I don't know. Once the Supreme Court holds that it's constitutional, it can never be challenged.
Uh-huh.
So it's important for the listeners to understand that. Whereas if it's not declared constitutional at that point and it's signed into law, it can be challenged
at a later date. Yeah.
At a later date, with
but ultimately not
in an abstract manner, with more specific facts in the case. So they're the things to be weighed up as.
But what I would see then with respect, Deputy, is that you will. Even if you're diametrically opposed to something in the role of president, you will park that and sign it anyway.
No, that's not happening.
But if you believe that's the right thing to do, okay, and down the line, so how do you then, you know, sort of? Can you understand how that might make people feel that they're? I know you might not like the phrasing of it, okay, but it sounds like it could just be more of the same. Michael D. Higgins signing controversial bills or into law on Christmas Eve.
No, that's not an accurate reflection of the role of president.
I'm only talking about the perception.
I'm answering it. I'm trying to answer it. It's not accurate. And I think it's important for the listeners to understand the role of president in that specific role in relation to legislation. It really is a very important role. Does the legislation comply with the Constitution? The president doesn't make that decision.
Of course he doesn't, no.
Yeah, the Supreme Court makes that decision. And that's important. My role as president, as I said, is to reflect on that, study it, and see, is that the right decision at that point to refer it and then have it declared constitutional forever or not? And that's a very, very serious role.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And I won't keep you very much longer. I know you have an incredibly busy itinerary. What is your position on a united Ireland and how that might be achieved, or how you might be able to influence if you chose to that as president?
Yeah, I think it's very important. I would love to see united Ireland in my time. And I'm very conscious, and I can't put it any better than the way it's set out in Article 3 of the Constitution, which I won't read out. But just the first few lines of Article 3. And Article 3 came after the Good Friday Agreement, simultaneously with it, really. And so it is the firm will of the Irish nation. So we've set out in our Constitution that it's the firm will of the Irish nation, in harmony and friendship, to unite all the people we share in the territory of Ireland in all their diversities of identities and traditions and so on, and can only come about by consent. But that's Article 3. And I take the Constitution very seriously. That's Article 3. firm will of the Irish people that we would have a united Ireland. And so I would use my voice in every way to cross bridges, to listen to people from all backgrounds in Northern Ireland and South in relation to making our constitution a reality.
Sorry for sticking on a specific point. Just our listeners would be very keen on getting answers to that. But that might pale into insignificance when it comes to the presidential debates. Is that something that you're looking for? Because, you know, what you see in the role and what you might bring to it, you know, might not lend itself to a big, heavy debate on very specific topics standing up in a TV studio somewhere.
I think I'm very comfortable in different roles.
Yeah.
And my background has given me that skill in different roles. So I'm a mother of two adult children. I've worked as a barrister. I've worked as a clinical psychologist. I've been Lascan Corla for 4.5 years, which is a very different role than a fighting TD. I've worked as a cleaner and a nurse's aide as a student. I've worked as a teacher in a horticultural centre for travellers. And so I've done lots of jobs. And that has given me both the courage, the skills, and the ability to listen. And I think it's really important to listen. For the last 2 days, I have met with various groups throughout. I have met with the group from Chrysler, and the third anniversary is coming up in 3 weeks. And I'm very, very conscious that this is a campaign for a presidential election. But I would like to mention what the Chrysler people said to me in a room over an hour, for example, just listening to them, and they gave me permission to say they feel abandoned.
Mm.
I just like to say that because they've asked me, and after listening to them for an hour, I have a duty to say what they asked me to say. I've also listened on Éileann Ardern. I've gone into different schools. I've gone into so many centres just to sit and listen. And it's, I think what has struck me as I've done my tour around everywhere is that there are so many community groups and cooperatives on the ground that are doing tremendous work that's unrecognised, really. And they have identified the challenges, they have identified the solutions, but they're struggling from year to year with resources, lack of recognition and resources. So I think as president, I have a number of different roles as president. One, to reflect the values that people have in this country. And to me, and I can only reflect as I listen, there's an absolute desire for peace, to use our voice for peace, to stop genocide, to stop the normalization of genocide, to use my voice in relation to the existential threat posed by climate change, to use my voice to reflect the work of the communities on the ground in the most inclusive manner possible. So I have many roles as president, and given my experience, I will do that to the best of my ability.
You don't then see it as a politically neutral role then?
I wouldn't use language like that at all. If you look at the constitution, the role of the president is set out in different articles. And so I would look at those articles as I've looked at them all the time and interpret them to the best of my ability in compliance with the constitution, but also in compliance with the solemn vow that I will have to take a vow to serve the interests of the welfare of the people of Ireland.
Listen, thank you so very much for calling in. It's a difficult environment for both of us because of the noise.
That's right, the background noise.
And everything. But I think people would get a great sense of who you are and what you stand for if they didn't know already. So we appreciate that. And listen, this is all about promoting Donegal as well. So it's a means to an end. But for now, Deputy Catherine Connolly, good luck with your presidential campaign. Thank you so much for calling in to us.
Gerda Mila Margaret.
Slán. We'll be back with more after the break.